their nurses calling me a slut, their mothers telling me that I'm a disgusting cunt, that I'm a disgrace. These are the people that are saying these things. You know, university lecturers calling me a whore.
Hi everyone, my name is Mel Gaudron and I'm the Deputy Editor at Marie Claire, and I want to welcome you to this week's episode of Finding Fearless with Marie Claire. For the past 7 years, SBS sports presenter Lucy Zelich has been the face of football in Australia.
What a game we have on our hands. As you mentioned there, Driller, 2-3 on the table taking place here tonight. Adelaide in red hot form. Sydney, likewise for them, they're unbeaten so far in the campaign.
Fronting the last two World Cup campaigns, international matches of both the Socceroos and the Matildas, and national and local derbies. With such a high-profile presence, she has also, not surprisingly, been on the receiving end of vicious personal attacks on social media that would shock you to your core. She believes enough is enough, and it's time the good guys reclaimed social media. At a time when we're all living more and more of our lives online, we couldn't agree more with her passionate campaign for online accountability. We are so happy to have her with us today to explain how we can all do our part. Welcome, Lucy.
That's a very kind introduction. I'll just take Lucy's Zelich at this point. But do you know what I've realised, actually, Mel, about women? We are so bad at accepting compliments, aren't we?
We always
have to shoot it down. You know, someone will say, oh, that's a beautiful dress, and you go, oh, this old thing, or I got it on sale. What happened to just saying, you know what, thanks, actually, thank you. I'm going to take that one and wear that proudly.
But do you ever actually try and do it? It is just, it goes against every grain of your body.
It does. And you feel like a bit of a wanker just saying, oh, thank you, don't you? It's really silly. We need to smarten up, ladies.
Well, we'll just get straight into it. So most people know you really as the face of football in Australia, along with Craig Foster. You've hosted all the major World Cups, the international fixtures, along with all the regular podcasts, weekly news wraps, etc. that you do. But you're really the official crazy, passionate sports nut. Where did this come from? Just explain a bit about your background, Lucy.
Background was, so born to two Croatian immigrant parents who migrated over to Australia in 1968. My dad first came over, actually he got on a boat from Trieste in Italy after being married to my mum for just 3 months, and his visa got approved and they were like, oh my God, okay, we got to go. And it was purely done with the view that he would come here, he would work for a year, send back money, yep, and then go back home and give, yep, everybody a better life. But came to Sydney and then after about a year, my dad said, look, you know what, I think we should start initiating the process for you to actually come over because I'm really enjoying it here and I think it would be a better life for us.
Great.
So then mum came across, they moved down to Canberra after having had my brother, my oldest brother Ned here, who everybody knows is quite synonymous with football, and then the rest of us kind of popped out one after the other. So my mum went on to then have another three kids, so I'm the baby of the family, mm-hmm, and just grew up in a sports loving household.
How was your sporting prowess?
Pretty terrible when it came to football, actually. I mean, I gave it a crack. I played sort of representative football at school, but I never really had a passion to play it. But then I had a bit of ADHD in that respect, career ADHD. I was always jumping from one thing to the next. It,
yeah,
was like, oh, okay, I want to be a tennis player 1 week, and next week I want to be an air hostess. Now I want to be a photographer. Now I want to be a lawyer. But throughout that whole process, Mel, I kind of ignored the fact that I just really loved football and that I loved to write, always loved to write.
I just wanted to know, what happened to Miss Universe?
Oh, yeah. Gosh, I feel like such a wanker admitting that now. I really do. Because when it pops up, like, I kind of just think about, oh, that was such a different time of my life. And the way that all that came about was, like, I was doing part-time modelling in Canberra, so I'd be kind of schlepping up to Sydney every now and again to do a couple of parades up here and some shows,
yeah,
doing some things for David Jones in Canberra. So that sort of came up when I think we'd gotten an email from my agent, and she'd said, oh, you know, they're taking entries for Miss Universe Australia finalists. Basically, this is an open call, and if you want to enter, you can enter. This is really weird, right? It's such a strange story. So I thought, okay, fine, I'll just do it for the hell of it. Who cares?
Yeah.
I'm not going to get in anyway. Like, you know, these women are just absolutely stunning. Like, they look like Barbies. They're all,
yeah,
beautiful, you know, beautifully busted. You know, and me, bear in mind, okay, now I'm breastfeeding, it's a different story, but I was a tiny little A cup. You know, there was really nothing special about me, and I can say that honestly. But I thought, all right, I'll just give it a go. Anyways, I think about maybe a week had passed. passed, 2 weeks had passed, and I had this dream, and I shit you not, this actually happened. I had this dream where I dreamt that I'd opened up my inbox and seen the subject, the title had said, "Congratulations, Lucy Zelich," right? And I dreamt this. Anyway, woke up the next morning. I thought, okay, I'm going to go and check my email just to see, right? I'm thinking this is a bit of a laugh. It's a bit of a joke. Nothing's going to happen. What do you know? I open up my inbox. I'm getting goosebumps as I retell this story. Open up my inbox and there it is. Congratulations, Lucy Zelich. You've been selected to be a finalist for Miss Universe Australia.
No
and
way.
And there it was. So all you had to do was kind of send photos. Now it's a much more rigorous kind of process.
They were like, finally, we got an entrant. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, my God. Hallelujah. Our prehistoric beauty pageant is still alive. No, I'm only joking. I still think it's great fun. But that's how that all happened, really.
And did you do it all? Like, you did the whole...
I did. I went to Perth. So there was me and three other girls from Canberra that went across. And
did you wish for world peace?
No, I didn't. I didn't actually wish for world peace, which is really embarrassing of me, isn't it? I should have got up there and said that I'm basically going to cure cancer and I'm going to cure all the world's ails at the
same time. Craig Foster would be very disappointed in you.
He would be so disappointed. But again, remember, this is a different time in my life. Pre-football, pre-any of this.
Pre-enlightenment.
Pre-enlightenment, exactly. Yeah. I was 19 at the time. But you know what I really liked about it? It wasn't what I expected it to be. And I mean that in the nicest possible way, because the girls were all really lovely. Yeah. You know, there was none of this kind of cattiness or bitchiness. The girls were just really nice. They'd help you backstage. You know, I helped one of the girls do her hair. Like, it was really lovely. And the girl that won, I still remember her name, Kimberly Bastide. She was from Gladstone. Gosh, she was just this beautiful Amazonian, tall, blonde, statuesque girl. But she had the loveliest personality, so down to earth, and really, really beautiful. I actually reached out to her quite a while ago on Facebook. She's had kids and she did, you know, so that whole experience, even though I kind of joke about how wanky it sort of was, it was lovely because, and you know, it's one of those things I can tell my daughter when she grows up one day.
Completely.
And you know, but it's my boobs are down to my knees. I can say, hey,
she'll be like, sure you did, Mum. Sure you did.
Exactly.
So you've been with SBS for 7 years now and been really heavily embedded in sport for years. In that time, you said you've had to put up with like the draconian views of some men, and as you just said, and even women, around women in sport. What's the actual worst that you've ever heard? And just left you, you know, shaking your head.
Oh, it's really hard because it depends. It depends on sort of where you're at in your life. Like for me recently, and it's why I penned that piece in Marie Claire recently this month, the worst thing that's sort of been said to me was, burn you fucking witch and your child too.
Social media, perhaps?
Yeah. It's social media. And that's sort of all the things and of all the aspects of my job, I think that that's probably the most difficult thing that I've had to handle. I've gotten a heck of a lot better at it over the years. But in the beginning, it was really challenging because, you know, my first World Cup that I hosted in 2014, that was brutal because I was really quite naive, Mel. You know, I thought that, okay, well, I'm really passionate about the sport and I've never shied away from having an opinion. I think it's important. You know, I'm not just there to sit in a dress and to tell you that a commercial's coming up and who's playing who.
Completely.
I want to give you my viewpoint. And I feel like having grown up with the game and having both of my brothers have played for Australia and at various levels of football globally, you know, I've developed an opinion and I feel like I'm entitled to that. You know, one of the things that I said at the International Women's Day breakfast a few weeks ago now over in Canberra was that we've never, ever told men to get out of the kitchen when they've aspired to be chefs or when they've come into our bathrooms and started playing with our makeup and become top makeup artists in the world.
Yeah.
We're not shooing them out of that space. In fact, we're welcoming of it. We're encouraging them because, you know, there is this big misconception that we just belong in the kitchen and you just beautify yourself and you take care of yourself, darling. Like the 1950s, you know, like out of an episode out of Mad Men, and you know that's fine, but you know we're not there anymore, Mel. We've come so far, and I feel like we need to get better at the way that we include voices across sport, across all platforms, and particularly sport when it comes to women. And I certainly can't stand here and say that I'm you know that I'm a pioneer of any stretch of the imagination because I'm standing on the shoulders of real giants, people like Debbie Spillane, you know, who's a real inspiration for me, and women that have gone through the hard yards and the times when they were booed off and they were told to get off their screens and there wasn't a place for them at all and networks were shooing them out the door. So, you know, we're lucky that, you know, and like people like myself and a great woman in football too, like Tara Rushton, you've got Mel McLaughlin, you've got these women that have paved the way already.
Completely.
And that can hold their own. I mean, that's what we have to say here. It's that, you know, give women a chance.
Because 100%.
A lot of the times, whether you agree with them or not, that's okay. I welcome debate. debate. I like healthy, robust debate, but not when it comes to my sex. And I don't feel like that should be something that's factored into it, you know. That
completely.
Whole argument of, oh, well, you never played the sport, so you don't have a place. Well, you know, I mentioned Les Murray before. He never played the sport either. Some of the biggest commentators that we've got across so many sports in the country have never played the game. But that doesn't mean that they don't still add credibility and have a strong view and can have an opinion on the game as well.
I get it. I also think it's because, you know, so much of the whole, that argument around women in sport, it's the same argument they've been using about women in any sphere, in business world or anywhere that's been traditionally male dominated. And it's effectively about being conditioned to say that we just can't get used to seeing women in a place where there's just always been men. That, you know, the cultural expectation around what women can do is so deeply set that anything different, it's just like people just can't accept it, and so therefore it takes a whole heap of people, it takes a whole heap of Debbie Spillanes for men to go, oh, that's just, you know, that is just the norm now. Do you think that change has actually occurred?
I think it's gotten a hell of a lot better. I absolutely believe that. I do. And whilst there are a lot of negatives to report, I think there are a lot of positives too. So we have to draw on the fact that, yes, we've made leaps and bounds. We're not necessarily going through as dark a period as what women were having to face, you know, say 10, even 20, 30 years ago. So we have absolutely made advancements. Is there still issues of sexism and those types of things? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's getting called out more readily now and that there isn't a place for it. And that people are coming to women's defence. And I think that's what it takes, you know. And going back again to the International Women's Day breakfast, I said, you know, for as much as we are calling on women to be uplifting of one another, what we also need here is a collective effort from men too.
Completely.
So we need men to be the champions. We need them to stand up and to support us because a lot of them are husbands and partners and sons and fathers, you know. These are important roles. And I've even said that to my own partner, Corey, about, you know, us having a daughter now. I've said the most important figure in her life. I'll play a big part, don't get me wrong, but I said the most important figure in her life when it comes to her self-esteem, the way she views men and her role in the world alongside men will come from you.
Yes.
And because I gained a lot of that from my father, for example. You know, he was the biggest champion of my self-esteem, of teaching me good values and morals and how to respect myself and respect others, to have a good work ethic. So, you know, I really valued that, and I think that for as much as we are in this together as women, we're also in it together with men too. So that needs to also be discussed in a broader sense as well.
I do think, but that the criticism has definitely ended up online, and now you're not going to get so much the, you know, people being, you know, female journalists being booed out of stadiums or anything like that. You're going to just cop it online in a way that that men potentially don't have to receive. Just going back to your original, when you were back in 2014, when you were doing the Brazil World Cup, as you said yourself, you were young, you weren't used to it, and you can't, but like, I mean, you also copped some absolutely terrible barrage of abuse from social media. There were things like, let's see, get the fuck off my television screen, you ugly bimbo. You stupid fucking slut. What do you know about Portugal? It's clear you only got that job because you slept with someone. Sorry, I didn't mean to laugh, but it's so fucking laughable.
Oh, yeah, it's
like,
crazy.
It's terrible. It's crazy. But, like, I know, like, you actually, being young and green, really, like, you reacted quite badly to that initially. Would you say that's right?
Yeah, absolutely. I can recall moments where I think after, because when it all started flooding in, I was really confused by it because I thought, okay, what's going on here? You know, if I was displaying a real lack of knowledge around the game, or I was, you know, clearly in the job for the wrong reasons, I think that's something worth calling out.
You're criticised for being a poor professional or for not knowing your stuff.
Yeah, that's something
completely.
Where people are entitled to have a say on that, because, you know, as lovers of the game, we are also actually entitled to have credible voices involved.
Yeah.
And I think that would have then been a slide on SBS, because they'd shown faith in me as a young, green 26-year-old from Canberra who hadn't worked in television before and had only really cut her teeth in radio and podcasts, to then delivering me one of the biggest showcase pieces in Australia and that you can be at the forefront of. So I knew the magnitude of the task ahead, but that certainly didn't deter me from wanting to do a good job. In fact, it made me really want to do a bang-up job of it entirely. So when I started getting the criticism, I thought, what's going on here? This is so bizarre. And it's strange. You almost become a bit of a masochist because you can't help but read the comments.
I know.
But then it got to a certain point where halfway through the tournament, I said, I can't do this anymore. I don't want to go in. My then boyfriend, who was really great at the time, actually, I can say respectfully, and still a great guy to this day. We just weren't cut out for each other, but that's life. That happens. I hope he's happy wherever he is. But he was fantastic because I remember I woke up one morning and the time frame as well that we were operating on, the schedule we were operating on, was so intense, Mel. Like, you know, we were operating on Brazil time.
Yeah,
so I was
sure.
having to go to bed at 4 o'clock in the afternoon to then be up at 10 at night to go in and host a show and then do some match day coverage, survive through all of that, then come out the other side of it and do interviews and everything. So it was really grueling. But I got up one morning, or one night, should I say, and I had a shower, and I just got out of the shower, and I lay down on the floor in the fetal position, just lying on the tiles, and I was just sobbing uncontrollably, and I just said, I can't do this. I don't want to do this anymore. Why am I a sadist? What's wrong with me? Why am I basically just going in consistently to throw myself out to the dogs and just be treated like scrap meat?
And so what did you do?
Well, I was just laying there and he came in and he said, you know, I really think that you need to start remembering why it is you love this job and why it is that you love football, because you're not doing this job for the love of television or anything that comes with that. You're doing it for the love of the game. And that's exactly what I needed to hear in that moment, because I think at that time I'd gotten too caught up in the the show business side of things versus why I was actually there.
Yeah, but also,
and
like,
that's what motivated me to go back.
The social media aspect of it isn't just about television. I mean, it's about life now. Like, it's just all pervasive and in your face. And I mean, I know that you then made a decision to go, well, you just turned off your phone and went, that's not it. I'm not even going to play in that field.
Yep.
But then fast forward another 4 years and then you're back at 2018 hosting the World Cup in Russia, this time with a much, on a much, much, much bigger scale, again with Craig. But you copped it again and this time.
I copped it far out. Can I just do a fucking World Cup without copying it? Come on, people.
I know, but this one was really weird, like, for me it was weird because it was actually about your pronunciation of players' names, of stadiums, of towns.
I want to read to you a really nice quote from Ivan Rakitic in a pre-match press conference.
I couldn't pinpoint if it was racism or sexism that was being thrown at you. I couldn't work it out. Yeah. What was your take?
It was a weird one, and it's still to this day, you know, almost 2 years down the track, still really bizarre to me. I still can't quite get my head around it. The thing that was fascinating to me was that, you know, ever since I'd gotten into this role and on all of my presentations, including the 2014 World Cup, I'd still been pronouncing things exactly the same.
Yeah.
So nothing changed in that four-year period. I didn't just wake up one day and say, hey,
I'm going to do it different.
Like this. No, no, it's always been like this. And, you know, for those that don't know, a bit of history, and it's what I went on to explain in that video that ended up going viral.
Yeah.
But, you know, for me, I grew up in a Croatian household and spoke Croatian as my first language for the first 4 years of my life. So, and not only that, I can speak, you know, a bit of German, basic Italian, and I'm learning French. So, you know, there is a real dedication on my part to, I know, right, what a wanker. But there's a real dedication on my part to linguistics because I just love learning languages and I love other cultures and And for me, it's always been about paying respect to them. So, and that's something that was a legacy that was left behind by Les, who always practiced the correct pronunciation and instilled it in all of us to follow suit, because it wasn't about pronouncing it for John Smith down the road. It was pronouncing it for those who lived in Greece or were from Greece and here. And that's who we're telling the story to. That's who we're pronouncing it for. Because, look, having, you know, grown up with Zelic my whole life as my last name and hearing it mispronounced so often, it's really quite lovely when someone says your name correctly.
Says it correctly.
For me, it's like,
I know.
That's really quite touching because, you know, that's how it's said.
I feel at the heart of it was racism, really. Can you just give us a couple of examples?
Cristiano Ronaldo.
And
because,
so,
again, that's how he would say his own name. That's how people
overseas
would say his own name. In Portugal would say his
own
name.
So the criticism was about the fact that, like, you rolled the R's and you spoke it correctly. Is that right?
Yeah. You'd have to ask the people. I mean,
the point seems mute.
I didn't get it. And I, yeah. and it was funny because when I, because I'd made the pledge to myself before I even stepped foot in Russia, I said, right, I've learned from Brazil 2014. I'm actually going to go into this tournament and I'm not going to look at social media. I'll post, I'll do everything that I need to do. But as far as notifications go, I don't care what anyone else is saying, whether it be good or bad, right? And the crying shame out of all of this too is that I actually really love social media.
Yeah.
You know, back when I did have a lot of time on my hands, more time now because I'm a less time now because I'm a mother. But, you know, I loved engaging with people and having debates and really getting into things. So that's kind of the biggest loss out of all of this is that I don't do that anymore because I've just had to say, right, I've really got to treat this with white gloves in many ways because I just can't throw myself into that again and allow myself to get into that headspace. So when I got over there, I said, I'm not looking at anything. So the only thing that I started to see was messages from back home, friends, family, the SBS publicist saying, look, you know, keep your head up. You know, my executive producer, Stu Randall, who's such a top guy and is no longer at SBS, but was just one of my biggest mentors and a wonderful champion of women in the role. But he sort of said to me, you know, don't listen to any of the criticism. And I said, what do you
Yeah, what criticism? What are you talking about?
I had no fucking clue what was happening. So then I got on the phone to the publicist and I said, you know, Lou, again, another lady that's no longer with us but great at a job. And I said, Lou, what's going on? And she goes, oh, look, it's all very bizarre. And I said, what is it? And she said, oh, people have an issue with how you're pronouncing people's names.
Oh,
I said,
for God's sake.
I said, what do you mean? And she said, I don't know. I think that you're pronouncing them correctly. Like not even she could give me a straight answer. So at that point, I just sort of said to myself, you know what? Let this storm in a teacup happen, but I'm not going to be involved.
Since then, after you've had your daughter in April of last year, you've changed again, which is what your column in this month's issue of Marie Claire is about, which is where you said that, you know, you saw an anonymous coward basically commented on a photo of her and said, burn your fucking witch and your child too. And I know, like as you said in the column, it triggered like this rage in you.
Oh.
Which I completely, completely understand. And it took you off on a path of actually going, no, stop saying about, you know, stop ignoring these people and just assuming they're going to go away. And you went down the path of actually trying to see who these people are. What did you find out, Lucy?
I get kind of my skin starts to crawl when I talk about this issue because then I reflect on that period when I had to go through and embark on this really grueling process to start actually looking into these people and to start reading the comments. You know, that was really rough and something that I'd really be deft to have to do again because it was really quite tough and taxing mentally. It's unnatural, what I will say, to read these kinds of comments about yourself. It's really not nice and it takes you to a place where you start to doubt yourself, you think that maybe there is some merit in it. And that's a dangerous seed to plant because then you start to let that impact how you do your job. And I never want to change the way I do my job because, I'm really passionate about the game. I'm passionate about the issues around football. And to have an opinion, I think, is important. Like I said, I don't just want to be, a clothes horse attached to a talking mouth piece. So for me, looking into who they are, these aren't trolls. You know, when you say the word troll, you just automatically you think of this hideous thing that's hiding under a bridge that no one attention to, but this wasn't coming from those types of people or degenerates. You know, we've always been told, imagine the kind of life that these people are leading for them to say these things. So I thought, okay, well, let's have a look then. Who are these people? I'll tell you who these people are. They're nurses calling me a slut. They're mothers telling me that I'm a disgusting cunt and I'm a disgrace. They're fathers of daughters and young children telling me that I'm just a pair of tits and I just basically should just put my head out onto the street and become a prostitute. Like these are the kinds of things and these are the people that are saying these things. You know, university lecturers calling me a whore. These are people that, you know, we're actually going to work with, that we're running into at the supermarket, that we're sharing a bed with potentially. You know, there was this one guy actually that keeps coming at me every now and again. He wrote to me initially and sort of said, oh, you know, you're an ugly slut and, you know, fuck you, go back to Croatia or go back to Serbia, wherever you're from, and all this kind of stuff. And he keeps going at me and going at me anytime I post something. And I thought, I just want to have a look at this bloke and see who he is. And what I found was really disturbing because there's photographs of him, how ironic, holidaying in Croatia and abusing the shit out of me. I feel like saying, get out of our hometown. Yeah. Get out of my home country, that's jerk. Right. But, you know, there's photos of him with what appear to be a really beautiful, lovely-looking partner. And I just, you know, my heart broke because I thought, I wonder if she knows that her middle-aged partner, this guy's probably into his, you know, well into his 50s, coming up to 60 as an assumption, really. But I wonder if she knows that this guy is abusing this young mother that's, you know, in her 30s, via social media, you know, sending her private messages and saying these things. You know, these are the things that we need to start bringing to the light, because I think that we've been shrouding them in so much darkness and saying, you know, just ignore them, block them. I've done all of that.
Yeah.
I've tried it all. So I've even tried being a smart ass back. You know, I've tried engaging with them in a sympathetic way and saying, you know, I feel sorry for you. Are you okay? You know, to be saying these kinds of things, it isn't great. I've done it all. And I'll tell you now, it doesn't work. So what I'm saying now is we need to start actually tackling this head on. I can't level with it. You know, we're told to try and sympathise with them, and I'm not going to sympathise with sexism, hatred, bigotry, racism. I can't level with that. So that's why I've sort of turned a corner now and thought, no, I'm going to start putting the spotlight back on them. So if you are going to put your name and your face to a photograph and to a social media account in which you're abusing people, just be prepared that I'm now going to start using my platform and my following to bring you out.
What are the actual logistics of that? What do you actually do? So if you get someone commenting on like your Twitter feed or wherever, what are you actually suggesting people do?
Well, the beauty of this is that, you know, it's to start, and we've already used this buzz term, it's to start a national conversation. So the first time I've spoken about it publicly is in my favourite magazine, and I'm not being biased or being smart ass. Yes, it is Marie Claire. I do buy it every month and have been since I was about 16. So that's the first time I've spoken about it, and it was in this article where I said we need to talk about trolling. So that was kind of my soft launch and an introduction to, right, this is what we're starting to talk about now. And in the coming weeks and months, I will start to roll out a sort of campaign of sorts where I'm going to start talking to people and getting key people involved. So those in the media already, you know, I've had a conversation with Erin Molan briefly, who another Canberra resident, but also has been on the receiving end of such disgusting hate. Yeah. Oh, it's embarrassing, you know, it's just awful. What she's had to endure and go through, and I've even read some of the comments that she's had to face, and I can't believe that these are people. I actually can't believe that these are people making these comments about another human being, because I think that that's what gets lost in all of this. People think that you're just this figure on a television and that you don't exist outside of that, that you don't feel and that you don't have a family. You know, one of the greatest things for me that I worry about is that when my daughter's old enough that she'll be able to see these comments online, or that my mother will have to see this, you know. And she was attacked too during the 2018 World Cup. You know, people were telling her, you go and learn how to speak English properly, you dumbass, and all this stuff. And I'm like, you're
saying
saying that about a woman in her 60s. Yeah. Like, it's crazy to me.
You just can't even say it. But I also think it's it happens every day to women who, you know, who just dare to even have any opinion on social media. Like, this goes on. You don't necessarily need to have a big platform to cop horrific, horrific criticism, sexist.
But that's why I'm taking this on. This isn't just about people in the media or people with a profile.
I agree,
Lizzie. This is a discussion for everyone to get involved in, because and the thing that gives me great fear is that there are young children, young as 13 and 14, committing suicide over things that are being said to them online via social media.
Yeah.
That can't happen. If there's one death, that's one too many. So the fact that we're open to the idea that there could be more, and that there is the possibility there'll be more, which there could be, and it pains me so much to say that, but you know that's where we need to step in and get
appalling that we're
involved.
Even having that conversation. So just so for our listeners' pleasure, so how can they get involved right now?
So right now, how do you get involved? I want people to start sharing their stories, and that's how this campaign will start off. So for those that have certainly had any kind of experiences with social media, they've had brushes with it where they've either been attacked anonymously or, you know, by people that they know, you know, I want you to start sharing your stories with me. There'll be platforms available across social media channels where you can do that. Mm-hmm. And there'll also be, and I will set that up, and it's basically it's on the way. So just just, you'll have to bear with me. But it is coming. But what I'm encouraging people to do in the first instance is start via their own social media platforms sharing their stories. So how is it that you've come into contact with any form of trolling, with people attacking you anonymously, or whether they've been people that you know? And when you share your stories, use the hashtag #BeAccountable.
Okay.
So these are the things that I'm going to start to keep an eye out. And then they will develop a rich tapestry of narratives that I will start pushing out publicly, and creating a national conversation and putting it to Parliament as well. So I've already started loose conversations with a great woman I'm a big fan of that works in Parliament, Sarah Hanson-Young, one of our politicians who has always been very fearless in her approach to talking about their own issues that they experience within Parliament.
Yeah, 100%.
And putting that out to the public domain to call out untoward behaviour. So this is the aim with hashtag Be Accountable. It's to start a national conversation about ways in which we can, A, bring these conversations to light. And I know that they're gruesome and they're gory and they're really ugly to have to look at, but we need to start looking at them. We need to start seeing them for what they are and seeing the people for who they are too, so that we can hopefully put an end to this behaviour. And also talking to social media platforms, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. How are they accountable in all of this? Because they do have a part to play.
It does feel like that the whole area is just like ripe for reform, really. Like something needs to happen to protect people.
And this is all geared up to work towards social media reform and how we can create a safer space for people online. Because the reality is the online world, although it may not be the real world, is starting to affect the real world. So people are starting to feel it in their everyday lives, and it's affecting the way that they live. It's affecting who they are as people, and it's really damaging too. So we need to start to think about more responsible ways that we can use social media and in the ways we interact with one another, because it's leaving a big impact, and I don't want it to leave the kind of impact where we look back in 20 years' time and say we should have done more to police this, and we should have done more to create a safer space for people online, because in my view, it's gotten out of control and we need to start to take the reins back and to put us back on a more positive path.
Good on you, Lucy. Thanks so much for today, mate. You've been fantastic, and we'll undoubtedly be in touch.
No, we will do. Thanks, Mel, and thanks to all the listeners out there. You're a great audience.
As Lucy says, this issue affects everybody, and it's time to out the trolls. Join the campaign by using the hashtag #BeAccountable on all your social media posts to spread the word. And please rate and review this podcast. It only takes a second. And subscribe to Finding Fearless with Marie Claire so you don't miss an episode. We'll see you next time.